New academic journals and conferences start all the time, and naturally, some of them stop operating. Normally, they die a quiet death, preluded only by ever-decreasing number of submissions. Last year, however, newspapers screamed, "Sex robot conference cancelled over backlash to proposed speech by Steve Bannon," and "Steve Bannon causes robot sex conference to be cancelled after protests erupt." Yes, you heard right. In today's episode, we will talk about conferences, sex, robots, and politicians. Did I miss any publicity buzzwords? Let me check. Nope, I guess we are good. That should be just about enough to get through.
This is the Human-Robot Interaction Podcast. I am your host, Christoph Bartmeck.
The story starts in 2004, when Adrian Cheok, then locate at the National University of Singapore, started the International Conference on Advances in Computer Entertainment.
I started the ACE conference in, it's a long time ago now. It was 2004, I think. At that time I was an assistant professor, I think, in the National University of Singapore. And at that time, it was extremely new topic, I mean, in academia. Not like now where there's, probably hundreds of conferences which are similar. And I actually proposed it to a society in Japan, because at that time also Japan was, really leading this field of computer entertainment. And I proposed it to I remember there was a meeting, a lot of old professors with gray hair. My hair's gone gray too now, but at that time it was all black. And I proposed this new conference, and of course, they all said, no, this is not an academic topic. This is nothing to do with academia or universities. So I thought, okay, I'll take a bit of a risk and I'll try to start the conference myself. And I was thinking of a good name, and then I thought Advances in Computer Entertainment. It's ACE, or ACE. So it sounds really good. It'll go on the top of the list because there's an A there, A and a C. My initials are also AC, Adrian Cheok. So we started it, and surprisingly, in the first year, nearly 100 people came to Singapore from all over the world. I mean, we had people from Australia, from maybe New Zealand. I can't remember, but Asia Pacific. We had people coming from America. Surprisingly, a lot of people came from Europe. And then I realized that there's a lot of people in Europe studying this topic, but they have nowhere to publish, No conference will take these kind of papers. So I was very surprised how many Europeans came.
It is not exactly true that there were no options to publish papers in the area of entertainment computing. In 2004, the conference series International Conference on Entertainment Computing started, and they consistently published with Springer right from the start. A year earlier, the International Conference on Technologies for Interactive Digital Storytelling and Entertainment had kicked off, and even the ACM started its Computers in Entertainment magazine. In 2009, the Journal on Entertainment Computing started. Adrian Cheok firmly stood as the head of the steering committee throughout the lifetime of the conference. The conference proceedings started to be published by Springer as early as 2010. In 2014, Yoram Shizik from the University of Madeira was the general chair of the ACE conference.
I organized the whole ACE conference in, I think it was 2014, and later the program for all the papers in the following year in Malaysia. In London, they asked me to join the steering committee, which is responsible for the overall running of the conference.
In the same year, the ACE conference hosted a Congress on Love and Sex with Robots that attracted 3 submissions. It was organized by Adrian Cheok and David Levy. David received his PhD from the University of Maastricht in the Netherlands in 2007 at the tender age of 62.
My name's David Levy. I'm originally in life, I was a chess player for about 10 years. I was a professional chess player, but I was also very interested in computing. And once I graduated from St Andrews University, I got a job in the computer science department at Glasgow University teaching programming to undergraduates for a few years. And eventually I combined my interest in chess with my interest in computing, and I got heavily involved in computer chess, which is a field I've been in all my life and still am. And then through computer chess, which is a branch of AI, I got interested in other aspects of AI, including human-computer conversation, and more recently in social robotics, in human-robotic interaction in personal ways. So I research these subjects. I'm also involved in commercial activities related to some of these subjects, but specifically human-computer conversation and computer chess. I should also mention that for the last 20 years or more of her life, my late mother, whenever I spoke to her on the phone or visited her, said to me, "Why don't you do a PhD?" And I always replied that it would take too much time. I didn't have the time. I had to earn a living, and you can't put a PhD in the bank. And it would mean sacrificing activities that I couldn't sacrifice. But when Jaap van den Herik suggested to me that I apply to do a PhD in Maastricht based on my book, and we discussed it a little, it became clear that I already had the research material necessary and that I wouldn't have to undertake a very long research period. I would simply have to rewrite the book and add some material, put it into an academic style and structure it in the academic way. So I went ahead with the idea. I applied to the University of Maastricht. They accepted me as a student. And I had two supervisors for my PhD. One was Professor van den Herik himself, and the other was a lady professor, Maike Meyer, who was a professor of gender studies at Maastricht. And that's exactly what we did. Jaap taught me how to structure academic writing, and the PhD was accepted.
In 2015, Adrian organized the ACE conference in Malaysia, where he also operated a research laboratory. The Love and Sex with Robots conference was intended to take place in conjunction with the ACE conference, but the Malaysian government did not appreciate sex robots.
The conference is going to be held in Malaysia. We got a call from the minister, not directly from him, but from his guys, saying this is anti-Islam, right? Because, and we said, why? Because we don't understand, I've never read the Quran or anything, but they said, very simple, Allah said any unnatural sex is wrong, right? Robot sex is unnatural, therefore it is wrong, right? So if we were in another country, maybe we would have taken a different position, saying, okay, fine, you know, you can express your views. Why don't you even come to the conference and talk about it? But we're in Malaysia, right? We're in Malaysia. It's their country. It's their rules, you know. Like when you go to someone's house, you got to, you know, like I say, when you Rome, do as the Romans do. So in that case, that's fine, because we're going to a country which is a Muslim country. If they say it's wrong from a very fundamental position, even though we don't think so, but we said, okay, fine, we will postpone it this year. Then we went back to London.
When we planned to hold the event in Malaysia, although we're well aware that Malaysia is a religious country and generally follows Islam, we didn't realize that that would extend to actually banning an academic conference. And of course, when the chief of police in Kuala Lumpur said that he declared our conference to be illegal, naturally, we had no choice but to cancel it.
Academic freedom is still widely supported in Western cultures, but the 2015 conference cancellation shows that sex robots is a topic that some people consider objectionable. Pun intended. The ACE conference continued in Osaka in 2016, while the Love and Sex with Robots Congress moved to London. The proceedings of the combined 13 papers from 2015 and 2016 were published by Springer. In 2017, both conferences took place in London. During the conferences, certain changes were discussed. This is the part of the story where the situation becomes murky. It is difficult to verify what exactly was said when to whom. No minutes were taken during their meeting in London. We have to rely on the personal memories of the people involved. Not all emails were available to me, and several tweets have been removed. The Wayback Machine of the Internet Archive allows us to reconstruct some of the communication. At first, Adrian had decided to step down from the conference, which would in his mind also imply that the conference would stop.
Actually, honestly speaking, I think I had some bad luck, because after the conference in London, I actually said to some people, I think it's time to close ACE. You know, it's better to close it and end with a bang, so to speak. There's always a point where you think, okay, if only I did that, you know. So that was the point. That was the point where I should have shut it down. I shouldn't have listened to the other committee members. I should have just shut it down and end on a high note.
The idea was, and what was expressed originally, that the old steering committee would retire, and Adrian as the founder would also retire. So, and we will start afresh, reimagining what it is to do computer entertainment today, since a lot has happened in the past 15 years, not just in terms of the people in the conference, but the actually technology. When the thing started, there were basic personal computers and large play areas, and now there's a lot of virtual reality. The world, from a technological perspective, is completely different. And we also thought that since a lot of the people have been, and especially Adrian has been around for a long time, it's time for new blood, and he himself has expressed the notion that he would like to pass the torch. So we said, okay, this is fine, and we decided that we will appoint one of previous steering committee members, Teresa Romão from Portugal, will remain on to maintain continuity, since she only joined a few years ago, and she will become the head of the committee, and we will appoint new ones in addition to myself. It was just appointed during London with somebody else.
Later, he changed his mind and continued to control the fortunes of the conference.
And in the last day of the conference, Adrian announced that actually he doesn't want to retire this year, wants to retire next year, and he's going to do, and he already made arrangements.
Adrian made several decisions that were not sufficiently discussed with the steering committee. He intended to co-locate both conferences in Montana.
So then we decided to go back to America. I thought, okay, we've been to London, we've been to Tokyo, we went to all the big cities. Let's go to, somewhere, a rural area, so people can get some different vibes when they attend the conference. So we chose University of Montana.
Since I'm running both of these things, I can decide what to do. And I said, yeah, well, you're involved in both of these things independently. I'm involved also in the animal computer interaction at the time, and reviewing for other conferences like ADC. I've been involved in other conferences, but I don't tell them, look, I'm doing this other conference and I want this to be here because I'm here. I mean, it doesn't work like that. So things basically boiled over from that. So it was okay, well, since it was late in the game to change anything, and we figured, okay, well, it's probably nice to end things on a nicer note than on a sour note. So, okay, and then we had plans that, okay, well, this would be the last one. Actually, we're going to have plans on having sort of turning it into a bit of a historical retrospective event. Okay, we'll maybe do a book looking over the past 15 years, and all of that, and then we'll make a big announcement of changing over.
David Levy was supposed to be the general chair of the Love and Sex with Robots Congress.
Well, the economic necessity was that the ACE conference is much better budgeted than Love and Sex with Robots, because ACE is a much longer surviving field, and so the number of people who come to ACE is sufficient to cover the costs of ACE, which includes the cost of hiring the venue, which is not insubstantial. In effect, Love and Sex with Robots was piggybacking on to ACE, and we were benefiting from the fact that ACE would be hiring the venue at the University of Montana. So we would have a venue that Love and Sex with Robots didn't have to, the cost didn't have to come out of the Love and Sex with Robots budget.
Because ACE was, really getting smaller and smaller, and I'm also running this Love and Sex with Robots conference, which is the opposite, it's getting bigger and bigger. You know what, these people, they don't understand the financing of conferences, but, I knew it was not viable to run ACE by itself. So I decided what we'll do is we'll have ACE and then exactly the same location. The next day we'll have LSR, right? So it wasn't going to be the same day, but, you know, basically the same location.
But for the 2018 one, they wanted to join them together, which we said, okay, well, this is not an issue, not because we have anything against the conference itself, since it spun out of ACE and we've organized two of the original things as part of the conference, but because if they're supposed to be independent, they're supposed to be independent. There isn't supposed to be any money moving from one to the other.
David Levy was embroiled in a legal battle concerning the reboot of the ZX Spectrum game console that was crowdfunded through Indiegogo. Retro Computers Limited, of which David is an officer, had to declare bankruptcy in 2018, and most of the Indiegogo backers will not receive any refunds.
About March, I started getting a lot of emails, and they're saying, Dr. David Levy is in the newspapers as a fraud. He's cheating people money. And I've known David for many, many years. This can't be true. He's the most, let's say, you know, typical British gentleman. You know, he's such a gentleman. He doesn't even like to argue with people. You know, he's very, very soft talking, and he doesn't like arguments. He just, so I called up David. I said, look, David, the ACE committee are complaining about you. They're alleging things like fraud and you're cheating people of money. And he said, look, Adrian, this is all coming from, we have a company and we're making this games machine. We had an internal, you know, argument, one of the, two of the members, you know, misusing the funds. So we decided to remove them as directors. So basically it was David Levy on one side and Sir Clive Sinclair. So David's really running, you know, I had to represent. So basically you have, you know, two directors on one side and two directors on the other side, David Levy and Sir Clive Sinclair. You know, basically they're suing each other. You're going to get 1,000 people saying other things on the internet, on Twitter and everything. But I talked to David a very long time and about it. And it seemed to me, okay, it is basically an unfortunate situation, but you have two directors on one side, two directors on the other side, and they're suing each other, right? And you know, when you bring in lawyers, you can drain the money in a very short time. So basically, they got to the point where they can't make the Vega, right? So then the two people who were on the other side, the two directors, of course, they resigned from the company. They're suing David and Sinclair. They had a very, very powerful, somehow they were very powerful to get people online to tweet and retweet and put on Facebook. And it started off by saying, you know, David Levy is a fraud because he took our money. We haven't got the Vega.
In June 2018, several academics expressed their concerns about David chairing the Congress on Love and Sex with Robots. And also the frustrated Indiegogo backers rallied to remove David from the conference.
There were quite a lot of complaints from members of the community because one of the organizers of the Love and Sex and Robots was embroiled in legal disputes involving a software company that he founded. Basically, rightfully pissed off and saying, why are you collaborating with a guy who's embroiled in legal disputes and who's effectively reclaiming stolen money from us because we give the money to develop a product, they didn't develop the product. This is more or less theft, and we're suing.
So it wasn't actually, it actually started before the whole Steve Bannon, you know, fiasco, so to speak. So I think by the time we got to Steve Bannon, each side was really dug in. It was like World War One. You're in trench warfare almost, right? And it was already in, let's say, Cold War before the Bannon thing.
This is the point in time at which the people involved locked horns.
Quickly, we found a brand new committee, and they're all eminent professors, high top-level people.
Adrian appointed Zaza Arzovsky from the University Novi Sad, Serbia, whom he employed in his lab in London, Malaysia, as the program chair. I am not familiar with Zaza's work, but Google Scholar tells me that he published a total of 34 papers, received 10 citations, and he has currently an H-index of 2. In the past 2 years, he published 7 out of 8 papers with Adrian as a co-author. normally program chairs are experienced and well-respected academics that guide the process. Appointing your own employee does create a conflict of interest. The steering committee asked for access to the paper submission system to be able to monitor the submissions and review process. Adrian denied them access. For the steering committee, consisting of Yorim, Teresa Romao, and Masahiko Inami, this had become too much, and they resigned in August 2018.
So I've decided to resign from the... We've discussed this with the other steering committee meeting members, and they said, well, you know, I'm going to resign with this because the way the conference was organized, because a lot of conferences either are organized by academic bodies like the ACM, the Association for Computing Machinery, that runs the interaction design conference and other ones, so they have their own large management bodies and all of that, or they're organized by a small group that either affiliated with a university or something like that and have a governing body, but they don't actually have any legal entity per se, so they have to ask for a university to host the event. So the university is actually a legal entity, because if you're going to run a conference and sign contracts with suppliers and everybody else, somebody wants, well, you need to be some form of legal entity so that we have some obligations to for somebody to pay us or anything else. So usually whatever university they're involved, they're basically asked as a host. ACE was actually incorporated as a legal entity in the United Kingdom, so it can act on its own and it can sign its own papers. Technically, the steering committee should be the governing body of the legal entity, because most companies or whatever have a governing board. So if it's a company, it's the board of directors. If it's a university, it's the Senate or something like that. In ACE, because it was run on a friendly basis and there were never any issues, the only operating entity or legally registered entity of ACE was Adrian. So the steering committee was powerless to do anything because, you know, if there's disagreements, they should be dealt with. And I said, well, you cannot do anything because I control everything. Yeah, well, that's very nice. Well, if that's the case, the only recourse I have is to resign. And the other committee members said, you know, legally, we don't have anything to stand on because if we sue, they said, you know, it's the only controlling interest. We can make a huff and a puff, but nothing apart from that. And I said, well, we should. And I said, you know, we rather want to sort of leave and maybe start something else later, because academics tend to be rather quiet when it comes to other issues. They tend to voice their opinions on academic matters, but nothing else. So I said, okay, well, we decided, we're going to resign en masse, which we did.
Adrian's next move was possibly the most disputable. He invited Steve Bannon, former advisor to Donald Trump, to give a keynote speech at the ACE conference. Bannon is a controversial and highly polarizing figure.
What Steve Bannon was going to talk about was, one, about his experiences in Hong Kong and inventing games which had, you know, basically in what we call now in-app purchases. Two, about how women, people of color, you know, minorities, Hispanic, Black, are much likely to get jobs in Silicon Valley. And it is true, if you look at those Google, Facebooks, etc., there are far majorities upper class white people and Asians, by the way, I'm half Chinese, but there's very, very few Blacks and Hispanics. And what he's saying is reduce the H-1B visas, because that, you know, it's just totally logical. I mean, if you're a Facebook and you can get some Indian engineer or Chinese engineer who's totally trained, can start work from day one, and you pay them, you know, this amount of money, why would you bother to train someone coming from a minority background, maybe lower socioeconomic class? I think his argument totally makes sense.
It is not unusual for politicians to speak at academic conferences, but this is usually constrained to welcome speeches.
You know, all you have to do is go and look at a few conferences and see how many keynote speeches are given by politicians or mayors of the town or, you know, and sometimes they're relevant, like maybe Minister of Science. But sometimes I remember being bored to death. You know, you go to Italy or something, and the mayor of Florence is going about economic revival in our region, and you're just kind of bored to death.
I attended many receptions at which the mayor of the city or a representative of the ministry would welcome the academics to the conference. But these speeches were most of the time boring and just a social pleasantry. They were nothing like inviting Steve Bannon. In October, Urim contacted the program committee and everybody involved about the resignation of the steering committee and about what was going on with the conference. Not all of them were even aware that they had been listed on the website. His email is available online.
I made an announcement, I resigned. The others said, you know, we'll leave it like that. So I knew some people knew, some people didn't. And basically, none of my business if people want to continue to be involved in the conference and work with them. I mean, everybody's a free agent. I'm not telling people what to do. But I figure because this has become such a big issue, I should at least let people know, you know, your name is listed, because some of them I knew were, how shall I call, vehemently opposed to such things. I said, you know, I'm just writing to let you know that you're still listed on the website if as a member of the program committee. If that's what you want, it's perfectly fine. If not, then please let them know, because it has nothing to do with me. And some people said, why am I there? And that created a bigger hoopla, with some people asking to be removed.
The Washington Post reported on Steve Bannon's involvement in the Hong Kong-based internet gaming entertainment company. Legal experts described the company's business model as a classic example of a grey market. His tasks were to legitimize the business and to do fundraising and eventually trying to take the company public. Their business model was to sell virtual goods in online games, such as powerful swords in World of Warcraft. Gamers in the West had the money but not the time to play the game at length to receive the virtual goods. Players in China had plenty of time to play the games, but no money. Internet Gaming Entertainment's business model was to connect the two and earn millions in the process. The gaming companies did not appreciate these grey markets in which players could use real money to purchase virtual currencies and artifacts. After several legal challenges in the US, the company had to abandon their business model. So Adrian's choice to invite Steve Bannon might not be completely disconnected from the focus of this academic conference. But Steve Bannon is barely known for his involvement with a Hong Kong-based gaming company. He was a senior advisor to Donald Trump and one of the founders of Breitbart News, a far-right news website. Steve Bannon was also vice president of Cambridge Analytica. Bannon thereby represents a right political position, much more than a shady online gaming business. Inviting him is like inviting Hitler to speak about his paintings. Yes, you heard me. I made a Hitler reference. And yes, Hitler was a rather unsuccessful painter prior to becoming one of history's worst dictators. Why am I using a Hitler reference? Because this is the level to which the discussion about the conference degraded. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Many of the organizers, program committee members, and authors decided to pull out of the conference and to retract their submissions. Adrian tried to save the conference by appointing new program committee members.
So also, AC lost all of the committee members, and their Love and Sex Robots lost almost everyone. But luckily, I still have very good friends in academia, good contacts in academia, you know, very top level professors. So does David. David's still got supporters, you know, like me, that understand he wasn't doing anything fraudulent.
Adrian appointed program chairs that many would not consider to be typical choices. This included Prince Akinwale Ojomo of Nigeria, a consultant for the World Economic Forum. His contributions to the science of entertainment computing eludes me. On October 27th, the story caught the attention of the international media, and the online discussions heated up even further. Adrian lost his temper and insulted several academics on Twitter, which fueled the boycott movement even more. The problem is that a conference with only a handful of submissions is not financially viable.
Unfortunately, Bannon, of course, is a very controversial figure. And although the subject that he was going to talk on was one that's actually quite positive socially. His general reputation preceded him and caused an enormous backlash against the ACE conference. And when the ACE conference ran into trouble, it became clear that the ACE conference had to be cancelled. And because the Love and Sex with Robots conference was economically dependent on the ACE conference, we had to cancel the Love and Sex with Robots conference. So it was nothing to do with the subject matter.
Then they dug into the Love and Sex with Robots conference until the same thing happened. We had to cancel it because, you know, everyone had withdrawn from the conference. So that's how it happened. But they didn't just stop there. Then they started going online about saying, why is Steve Bannon giving a speech at the Love and Sex with Robots conference? But he wasn't. He never was. But of course, that story also, you know, went all around the world, but that was not actually the case.
Adrian had to cancel the event, but not without posting a polemic statement on the conference's website about how the anti-free speech fascist-style mob had started a hate vendetta against the conference and its members. He compared the events to the book burnings that took place in Nazi Germany in 1933. See, I promised you I would come back to Nazi Germany. You cannot escape Godwin's law that states that as an online discussion grows longer, the probability of a comparison involving Nazis or Hitler approaches one. The publisher Springer also decided to pull out of the conference, and in a statement from Renate Bias, Springer explained that the decision to withdraw has been made following a number of irregularities reported to us regarding the paper reviewing and selection process and regarding the organization of the 8th 2018 conference. Many authors that had submitted papers to the conference retracted their contributions, and hence the conference became no longer financially viable. It is expensive to hire conference locations, and the provider often asks for an upfront down payment upon the confirmation of the booking, which brings us to another difficult topic. Documents available to me reveal that Adrian Chiok signed contracts on behalf of a non-profit organization registered in the UK as an unincorporated organization named Advances in Computer Entertainment. Yorim had stated that Adrian had been the sole signatory of this organization. It is often a wise choice to start an organization if you want to run a conference, so that you can separate the fortunes of the conference from your private affairs. This can be achieved by registering a company or by starting a charity, or both of the above. I started searching for this organization, and neither the UK Charity Register nor the UK Company Register lists an Advances in Computer Entertainment organization, which makes me believe that Adrian might have chosen a more informal organizational structure, such as by simply opening a bank account and naming it after the organization. Adrian would have still been personally responsible for the losses, but also be the beneficiary of the profits. Conferences can make good money, which is the reason why we have so many predatory conferences. I'm not saying that Adrian ran the conference for his personal benefit, but mixing your personal finances with that of a professional academic community does create conflicts of interest that should be avoided. Looking back at the events, Adrian did come to some conclusions.
I'm the kind of person, you know, if I see a right, I'll call it right. If I see a wrong, I'll call it wrong. I'm loyal to my friends. David Levy has been a good friend of mine. I mean, look, if I really felt he was a fraud, I would have said, look, David, it's probably better to step down and, you know, just for the sake of preventing more scandal or anything. But I honestly believe, and to this day believe, it was nothing fraudulent. It was just a legal battle.
Adrian is no longer associated to the City University of London, and his research laboratory in Malaysia has also come to an end. He's taking a break from academia.
So I've had a very, very long career, obviously. It's been very exciting. It's been great. But I decided this year to come back to Australia, you know, at least for a little while, back to my homeland. And in the upcoming elections, I'm actually running for one of the lower house seats in Adelaide. although it's for one of the minor parties, chances are small to win the seat, but it is a kind of very exciting thing to do and something very different, you know. I think sometimes you need to refresh yourself and do something totally different. So that's what I'm doing right now.
But a larger-than-life person like Adrian can hardly stand still. He's currently running in the Australian elections, which will take place on May 18th. He claims to be a candidate for the far-right marginal party called Fraser Anning's Conservative National Party. Their website, however, does not list him as a candidate. It is also unclear to me how Adrian can reconcile his work on sex robots with the policies of the party. After all, the party's objectives are traditional family values, including recognizing marriage as only the union of a man and a woman, and the sanctity of human life at all ages, including both the unborn and the elderly.
A lot of people in the right wing hate the whole concept of love and sex robots. I got a lot of messages saying, you know, how can you believe in this? It's against God and against religion, I don't know what. So, you know, people in the right wing don't support love and sex robots at all. So it was kind of contradictory because on one hand they're calling me a fascist, and on the other hand the right wing is saying, how can you support this disgusting topic, you know, anti-Christian, anti-God, etc.
Adrian had, in a 2017 keynote speech at the Foundations of Digital Games conference, argued for the possibility of marrying robots. The online discussions after the keynote turned nasty, and the Federation publicly condemned Adrian's behavior.
I gave a speech which they found extremely against their views, right? So again, very crazy allegations, like they alleged that I compared robots to humans. No, I didn't. If they listened carefully to my talk, I was saying that in Dr. David Levy's book, he predicts people will marry robots by 2050. They said about, do I get consent of my students, right? And it was a utterly, I think, ridiculous argument, because this device I invented called Kissinger, it was the work, I mean, you know, professors, we invent things, but actually PhD students spend years and years doing it. So this student of mine, fantastic student, she's an amazing engineer, very, very, very bright, one of the top PhD students I had. She basically worked 5 years on this project. In this conference, they alleged I didn't get her consent for this project, but what they don't understand is that she was working on 5 years, not me.
Furthermore, both of Adrian's parents were immigrants to Australia. His father was born in Malaysia, and he's of Chinese descent. Fraser Anning's Conservative National Party objectives is the vision of Australia as an English-speaking, predominantly European Christian Commonwealth country. The party is seen by many as being nationalist, populist, and possibly even white supremacist.
My tipping point was being part of Davos in 2008, 2009. So I was very, very much a populist and economic nationalist. I also strongly agree with Steve Bannon's view that, you know, China has actually stolen a lot of manufacturing jobs from America, also from Australia. In Adelaide, we used to have three car manufacturers, Mitsubishi, Ford and Holden. They all went. Just last year, Coca-Cola plant shut down. We can't even make Coca-Cola here anymore. Neither me nor Steve Bannon are far right, but I definitely would say I support populism and economic nationalism.
I do not know how Adrian reconciles his own views and history with the party's vision. But why going there at all? Why abandoning a comfortable position at City University of London?
I've been working as an academic for, you know, 25 years or more if you count my PhD, you know. And you know, my grant in Malaysia, which was a 5-year grant, it finished on January 31st this year.
In the meantime, Adrian has been appointed a visiting professor at the Novi Sad University in Serbia. Remember the appointment of Zaza Ozovsky to the program committee of the ACE 2018? It looks like Zaza returned a favor. Adrian has also been appointed as an adjunct professor at Raffles University Iskandar, the home of his Malaysian research laboratory. He is also to become a member of the new I University in Tokyo, a professional university with currently 3 continuing full-time academics, and 135 visiting teachers from industry. All of this information is from Adrian's website and is difficult to verify.
I have a professorship in Tokyo next year. Well, right now I'm really into politics in the Australian election. I actually am visiting professor in the university in Adelaide, visiting professor in the university in Serbia, which is the school of Mihailo Pupin, which is a very famous electrical engineer. Oh, I'm still visiting professor in Raffles University in Malaysia.
In his emotional response during the online flame war, Adrian had insulted others for working in a tin pot university in the middle of nowhere. Well, the Novi Sad University is not exactly top 200 material either. But why is there a need to verify this information anyway? The integrity of academics is usually outstanding. Normally, no academic would dare to openly mislead or post wrong information about themselves. In Adrian's case, the situation is a little bit more difficult. If you look at his most recent CV, you notice that he lists 5 editor-in-chief appointments, 3 associate editor appointments, and 6 editorial board memberships. This does look like a lot of work. Actually, it looks like far too much work for a single academic. How can he operate that many journals to the highest academic standards? We need to take a closer look at the list. Adrian was an editor for the ACM Computers in Entertainment Journal from 2009 until 2012. The Multimodal Technologies and Interaction Journal that only started in 2017 does not mention Adrian as an editor at all. The Lovotics and Advances in Robotics and Automation journals are operated by the predatory Omics groups, who was just fined more than $50 million for misleading academics.
All I can say is for our journal, I insisted that every paper should be published for free. I said, otherwise we're not coming with you guys, right? So although I know a lot of the other journals, when people publish the paper, you know, they pay some publishing fee, which is normal these days, actually. Even the top journals like Springer or Elsevier are doing the same thing with these open access things. I said I would only come on board if this journal is free, like the authors don't have to pay.
I checked the website of the Omics journals, and for a paper in Lovotics, Omics charges €299. And for a paper in Advances in Robotics and Automation, you need to pay €674. Why would Adrian think that there were no publication fees? Maybe he was unaware of these charges? As an editor-in-chief, should he not be aware of these charges? For science to proceed, we need to be committed to truth and the freedom of ideas. At the same time, academics are exposed to ever-increasing pressure to be universal research superstars. We are supposed to conduct groundbreaking research, provide world-class teaching, and lead our scientific communities. The competition for positions is extreme. As a result, academics have to spend a considerable time to promote themselves. We put our publications, CVs, and other information online. It is not surprising to me that at times we might lean towards inflating our own importance. Adrian Chiok is no exception. It is important to note that being on the receiving end of an online campaign is very stressful. Under pressure, we might not always make wise decisions, and in hindsight, we might regret some of our actions.
I must admit, I should have kept my cool a little bit more, but I didn't. You know, these guys were making the most outrageous allegations on Twitter. You know, basically, I fought back. You know, there was this guy on a committee, and he was really rude to David, and I just felt so angry, so I lashed out on at him on Twitter, and you know, of course, then they took that and said I was unacademic, offending him, and all this kind of stuff. So it just kind of spiraled out of control. The only change that I've made is more not to put things online, just say things to my friends.
Academics are humans with emotions, families, and lives. Going through a rough patch in your life and career can tremendously impact your well-being.
You know, all these outrageous things, it was just totally crazy. And to think that it drove David to the depths of despair. I think at first it was a shock. I didn't know how to handle it. It was my first time to be in the center of David Levy. David Levy was the first victim, as we talked about. But then next was me. Like, it was all centered around me, plus David Levy. And, you know, the only person I could really talk to was David Levy, because we were in it from the start. Most people would have not have stuck to the guns. They would have immediately dismissed Steve Bannon, like New Yorker Festival last year did. They asked Steve Bannon to be a keynote speaker for the New Yorker Festival. But as soon as there was an outcry, they immediately dismissed him. So I think 99% of academics would have done the same. They would have immediately listened to what they were saying and just got, you know, just to save trouble, get rid of Steve Bannon, right? I think, you know, it goes back to the fact that if I believe there's nothing wrong, then it must be right, you know. In retrospect, it would have been much easier in my life. I would have just got rid of Steve Bannon and got rid of Love and Sex with Robots, got rid of David Levy. I would have survived quite well, right? Maybe because, you know, now I'm at the point in my life now, 47, I've been a full professor for over 10 years. I don't feel so much pressure about, you know, my career. I've learned that, you know, it's probably better not to be so emotional online. Like, I definitely don't write emotional things online anymore. You know, if I'm upset or angry, I just let it go. But at the same time, sticking to my guns.
I wish Adrian all the best for his future career in politics, although I do not agree to his political views. I also wish him all the best for his academic career. He certainly does have a skill to tackle thought-provoking topics. Maybe a lesson to learn from these events is that healthy conferences are supported by a strong community. If the founders to continue to control it and are unwilling to set up a governing structure, then the conference might lose the community support. Founders need to let go of their babies.
I was all ready to retire, basically, after 15 years of running the conference. But, I mean, like I said, I created this conference in Singapore, 2004, I think. So, you know, it really was something I created and I was involved many years. I just didn't feel I want to hand it over to those people at that time.
Even academic superstars cannot carry a conference without the community. Researchers might not have the power to change an organization, but they can always withhold their support. They might simply stop submitting their papers. Let me say this again. Founders are not the owners of conferences. It belongs to the scientific community. At times, it does take visionaries to start a new conference. But if it does not start to carry itself, then it is time to let go of the conference altogether.
It went quite well over the years, but I feel it was a gradual decline, because I think one thing is, I think AC got to 15 years or something. But, you know, like I said, now, so many conferences related to computer entertainment, to video games, etc. But even like traditional computer science conference will now accept papers related to computer gaming. So in some way, there was no real purpose for ACE anymore. So it was a gradual decline, and we started, you know, we used to, like I said, the peak was in Spain. I think it was about 300 people, academics coming, and then, you know, gradually going down and down until, you know, last few years it was about, you know, less than 100, you know, 70, 80, whatever.
Another lesson to be learned is that a populist's approach to science is dangerous. Inviting polarizing speakers might backfire. Inviting Steve Bannon as a keynote speaker was a big gamble.
Yes, it was a daring move. It was a decision by ACE, not by not by love and sex with robots, but a decision by ACE. And it didn't work out. You know, in life, one sometimes makes mistakes.
It certainly attracted a lot of attention, but this did not save the conference. It did not lead to more submissions. On the contrary. Last, I would like to point out that the Congress on Love and Sex with Robots certainly had a difficult start. This is a controversial topic, but science certainly should not shy away from it. Nothing should be excluded from a scientific investigation. But the conference so far failed to actually investigate sex with robots. Not a single paper published conducted an empirical study in which people had actual sex with robots.
But it's on the way to being solved, because Matt McMullen, who you've interviewed not so long ago, his company is coming out with what will be the world's first sex robot, the first genuine one. I mean, there have been, you know, other people who said they've got them. There's one guy in the States who's been claiming for 10 years that he has a sex robot, but he doesn't. But Matt McMullen's product is a real product, and it's going to make a very big impact on society. I predicted in my book 12 years ago that his company would be the first in the world to produce a commercially available sex robot. I got the time frame a bit wrong. I thought he would do it sooner, but at least I was right in guessing that he was going to be the first. And I think he's going to be responsible for a sea change in public attitudes, because when the public see his product and read interviews or articles by people who've had experiences of sex with his robot, I think people will realize more and more that this is now here to stay. It's that they've arrived and they're not going away, and they're only going to get better. And then as that happens, of course, his sales will go up, and then there will be several people quite quickly who have experienced the sex with robots, and then you will get some empirical research. You're quite right, there hasn't been any so far, but there couldn't be, because there haven't been any sex robots so far.
Working at the edge of science has the potential to break some actual new ground. Love and sex with robots is a research topic that certainly deserves our attention. Since this is such a controversial topic, and since it attracts so much media attention, it is advisable to be extra careful. Utmost academic rigor should be applied. Since the conference is expected to continue for the years to come, it would be desirable if the lessons from the ACE 2018 debacle could be learned. The conference should establish a governing body, set up guidelines and procedures for the management of the conference. It is much easier to agree on the rules of a game when the players are still friends. This should also include rotating roles for the steering committee. It should also set up ethical guidelines and standards. The conference should not fall into the same founder trap as ACE did. It should not continue to be Adrian's and David's conference, but a conference carried by the community. It will also seem advisable to better manage the media attention this conference will without a doubt attract. No additional controversy is necessary. Or if it does, it probably ain't worth it.